your money and your life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from the KFMD studios in beautiful Kearney Mesa on this beautiful Sunday night. We are heard with 50,000 watts of power, not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night out to the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire, a marathon runner, a philanthropist, a core member of the Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable of San Diego. All around good guy. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am doing great, Joe.
Excellent, excellent.
And I wanted to send my condolences to everybody in Boston who was affected by that absolutely horrific event this past Monday, April 15th.
Yeah, you ran it last year.
And I ran last year, 2012, in record-breaking heat, and I also ran in 2010.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was even thinking of going next year just to make a sign. Well, not to run, maybe, but just to be there.
Joe, I want to see you run it.
I don't think I could qualify right now, but
okay.
But what are you thinking? What are you thinking next year, Richard?
I was invited to run this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, when the race started, I was sort of regretting not going because the headline said, perfect weather for start of Boston Marathon. My joke is that the average temperature when I run Boston is 60 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Because last year was record-breaking heat, 90 degrees. I think only 21,000 of the 27,000 people who signed up finished. 3,000 never started, and 3,000 who started didn't make it. And then in 2010, it was 30.
Yeah.
So that's an average temperature of 60 degrees when I run it. I'm like, oh, for goodness sakes, why can't I ever run this thing when the weather's great? But boy, by about 2 o'clock, I wasn't regretting not running it.
Yeah, and it's hard to even qualify for that, right? I mean, they turn
Yeah, I mean, I did it. I did in 10. I went as a charity runner last year, mm-hmm. raised money for Perkins School for the Blind, because I started learning Braille from them when I lost my eyesight.
Yeah, that's an inspiring story. But a couple other great things coming up this week. There's a film, a documentary that's being sponsored by the San Diego Venture Group. It'll be held at Jacobs Hall. As you know, Erwin Jacobs was a guest of this show. It'll be at Jacobs Hall on the Qualcomm campus this Thursday night. If you'd like more information, it's go to sdvg.org. It's a film about entrepreneurship and Pitch Fest and that whole sphere. And then also next Saturday, Sunday, I'm a board member, as you may know, Richard, of the San Diego Performing Arts League. And we are one of the participants at the Mission Federal Art Walk. And that'll be in Little Italy next Saturday, Sunday. Very, very huge event. Big attack. I think it's like 300,000 people or some crazy number over the 2 days. So, but 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. next Sunday, if you're interested, go to Mission Federal Artwalk.org, I believe, or Google that, and I'm sure you'll find more. So
that's a good event. I went a couple of years ago.
Yeah. How's parking?
what parking?
Maybe I'll park in Chula Vista and take the trolley or something.
Yeah,
who knows?
I was going to say, take the train.
Yeah, yeah. Because
the parking is rough.
But without much further delay, because we have a really terrific guest tonight, how about we get into the show? Is that cool with you?
Hey, why not?
Okay. Well, look, I've known this guest, full disclosure, probably since almost close to 30 years when I met him outside the Improv Comedy Club in Pacific Beach when it was there in the early 80s. But this gentleman here is... well, most people recognize him from KUSI as a premier entertainment reporter. He's been on XETV. He's an actor, a voice actor, world traveled, and he's the great Fred Saxon. So, Fred, welcome to our show tonight.
Well, thank you very much. It's very good to be here, and I'm relieved to find out that the name of the show is not Your Money or Your Life.
Actually, that Jack Benny joke was part of the inspiration for the title. But anyway,
we talk about estate taxes a lot, so we might be changing it to It's Your Money and Your Death.
Yeah, but you'll see.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. I like that.
You'll
one.
Get out of here alive, I think. So
no, it's the government's money and your death. But anyway.
But anyway, Fred, native of Detroit, why don't you give us a little bit about your background? We'll get into your professional history as well later on. But born and raised where? And
well, first of all, I got to say that I have had the great opportunity to live a life up to this point that very few people have. Some people like to say they're blessed, they're fortunate, and I'm all of those things. timing was right and circumstances were right. I came out of blue-collar Detroit. Where I was born and raised, and at that time I was a musician. I learned to play saxophone at the age of 9, and I had a band, and we we became a very successful band in the city and traveled a bit. And later on, and we were called the Sunliners. And later on, shortly after I left the group, they morphed into a Rare Earth. They became Rare Earth. Now, a lot of people say, Rare Earth, yeah, I'm not sure I know any of their stuff. Well, they had a song called I Just Want to Celebrate.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And also Get Ready.
Get Ready.
And Hey Big Brother. And
how many people were in this band, Fred? And
the original group was six, and then when I
what was the racial mix? Because I mean, that's a soul. I mean,
no, it's a white all Caucasian group. It was the first white group signed by Motown, and as the Sunliners, we were the first white band to record in the Motown studio, Hitsville, USA, on West Grand Boulevard.
I did not know that.
They created the label to get away from rhythm and blues and the Motown sound to create more of a rock sound. They morphed into rock. So my roots were in music and performing and show business.
Is that all on fredsaxon.com?
No, it's not.
All right. Well, let's make a little tab there when you get a chance.
But it's it's around. And then oddly enough, last night I was with the lead singer of Rare Earth, who we're still friends. And he was in town for the night, spent the night at my house, and we had a great time sitting up till real late talking.
Oh.
And he's out. He's still out there singing. Name is Peter Rivera.
How about that?
Anyway, so that it came. You know, it started in music, showbiz. Then I got into producing records, and then I had an opportunity to make a lot of money in the sales business. I got into sales, multi-level marketing sales, and I traveled the country. Became an area director for a number of different cities. Ended up in Atlanta, Georgia, and wanted to get back into show business. Didn't know how to do it. And there were only three stations in town, except there were four, actually, counting WTCG, Turner Communication Group, Channel 17 at the time.
And this was, about 80, 75?
This was in the 70s. I got to Atlanta in 73. So 74, 5, 6, you know, I got involved with the disco. I was a DJ. I was a disco DJ. And then owned a nightclub, then owned a teenage nightclub, part owner, and a lot of different things related to show business, but I wasn't performing. I didn't feel I was comfortable in my realm, so I wanted to get a job.
And this is all in Atlanta, right?
This was in Atlanta. I wanted to get back into show business, but not into music, because I didn't feel rock and roll was my thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And my saxophone was getting heavier every year. I don't know what's up with that. I'm not sure. Anyway, so I went to the local television stations and met with each of the news directors, said I'd like to, you know, be on television. Yeah, so? A lot of people would like to be on television. So what? And so that's what they said at two of the stations. And the third station, the guy said, you know, we're looking for a movie reviewer. So I thought, well, that's great. And about a year and a half later, I did get hired as the first entertainment reporter for that station. Well, I wasn't the first, but I was WXIA-TV. 11 Alive in Atlanta. At that time, it was an ABC affiliate. So I reviewed movies there for about a year and a half. And then I went in one day, and the news director said, I need to see you in my office. Went into his office, and he said, yesterday was your last day. I said, really? What did I do? And he said, nothing. We just had a focus group results, and we found out that people aren't interested in entertainment news.
Oh, jeez.
So I thought, well, that's too bad. So I was out of work, and I had done a movie, my first movie role during that time I was with the TV station, with Tim Conway and Don Knotts, a movie called The Prize Fighter. Pretty bad movie, but what a wonderful experience. I was the ringside radio announcer. Tim Conway played a washed-up fighter. Don Knotts was his manager. So I spent a week on the set, about 7 or 8 days on the set, working with Tim Conway and Don Knotts.
And Tim Conway wrote this entire thing, because I spent a day with him several years ago, and he talked about this film. But anyway.
Yeah. And it was directed by Michael Preece, who was a big-time director on television for Dallas. And this was his first feature film. I was so fortunate to get that job, my first movie job. And I then had the movie bug, and I thought, well, you know, I was offered a job in Boston, WCVB, to go to work and be kind of their Rod Luck. You know, remember what Rod Luck used to do on KUSI here in San Diego?
Go around town and get.
He's a guy around town.
Yeah.
So I had that job offer in Boston, and then, you know, I thought, I grew up in Michigan. It's cold there. Boston, it's cold. I think I'm just going to go out to L.A. and try my luck. And I did, and I didn't have any luck. I had no luck. I was eating with unemployment money, and then that was running out, and I called back to Atlanta, and I said, hey, is there anything... any jobs there in Atlanta, you know? And they said, this girl I spoke to, she said, where are you? Ted Turner's looking for you. What? I got hired as the first entertainment reporter for CNN and was with them.
1980 or so?
It was April of 80 when I got hired. We went on the air June 1st. I knew Turner. They knew my work from Atlanta. Ted Turner, the crazy guy, who when he started a movie, a black and white old movie channel, everybody said, boy, this guy's nuts. Who's going to watch that? Mm-hmm. And then, while I was in Atlanta working for WXIA, they said, did you hear what Ted's going to do? He's going to have 24-hour news. Man, this guy's gone off the rails. He's crazy. He has no idea. Who's going to want to have news on 24 hours? Is he nuts? Yeah, he was nuts.
As Larry King.
Yeah. Hey, Turner was a great, he was the first baseball owner to ever manage his team for a day before Major League Baseball said you can't do that.
Is that right?
He managed the Braves for a day when I forget who got fired.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was looking for you, and you become, I mean, did he actually personally intervene? Or
not to my knowledge, no. He had a bunch of people that he had hired, people who needed work. Mm-hmm. He built the network with a bunch of, I don't want to say losers, because that I'm in that category, but they were essentially looking for an opportunity.
Yeah.
They had been, for some reason...
lower budget talent.
Lower budget talent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he built the network on low budget, and it was very low budget in Hollywood. We had two cameras, and we had to do everything with two cameras. And we had a talk show at night, and if one of the cameras was out shooting blood on the sidewalk downtown somewhere... we had to do the show with one camera.
What was your first assignment as CNN's Hollywood reporter? Do you recall what it was?
Oh, gee. I
put you on the spot. Maybe not.
I kind of made up my own stories. Mm-hmm. I decided what
well,
I wanted.
That's Hollywood.
I decided what I wanted
to fiction,
do.
Fiction, huh? Okay.
I mean, no. I mean, I saw films. I reviewed films. Uh-huh. They also gave me a half-hour weekly show. It was called The Best of Fred Saxon.
Who was the first celeb that you interviewed? You recall who that might have been?
Great. These are great questions. I'm going to have to look that up and get back to you.
I know there's only been over 800, right?
So. Yeah, and that was 1980. So I'm going to have to look and see on my archives the first half hour show that I did. And see who was on that show. That's a great question. Yeah, thank you very much. Okay. I'm going to have to come up with a mediocre answer.
But anyway, so that's fascinating. You went from, food stamps to that. So anyway, we'll be back with Fred Saxon and more of Richard and Your Life after these announcements. Stay tuned. We're back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life with our special guest, KUSI reporter. You remember him, did all the entertainment, the films. His name is Fred Saxon. Fred, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hey, now you've got to...
Thank you.
Yeah, now, in connection with this, the beginning of your entertainment reporting with CNN, you bumped into a film giant in a very unlikely setting, and I'd like you to share that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so here's the story. We're about 2 weeks from going on the air. We're going on the air June 1, 1980. So it's like the middle of May. And there's an actor strike on. And the actors aren't working. And I'm anticipating going to work for CNN. And I'm stopping at a wonderful place to eat, Burger King, with all my money, that I had.
On Hollywood and Franklin and Vine or something?
Hollywood... Highland and Hollywood. It's just north of Hollywood Boulevard, on Highland.
So
right near the Kodak Center now. Where
so
the Kodak Center.
So glamorous, Fred. I love this.
Glamorous. I walk in there. I'm eating a burger and fries, and I look across the room. Well, first of all, as I'm sitting there eating, there's an actor strike on. Everybody's out of work, and sitting two tables away are a bunch of little people. Mm-hmm. Some people call them dwarfs, previously midgets, politically incorrect now.
Right.
Small people, little people. They were actors.
Right.
And they were working on this movie called Under the Rainbow.
Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase, yes.
Yeah.
Chevy's in that movie and some other people, and it's an interesting film. And
it's pretty bad, but anyway.
It's based on a casting call for The Wizard of Oz.
Right. So tell them what these little people are doing.
Well, they're sitting there and they're complaining and they're talking in their little people voices. So here I am. I'm eating my burger and fries and I'm hearing things like, yeah, you know, I keep trying to get another interview. How long do you think the strike's going to last? And I can't believe this. There's all these little people, and they're laughing, and they're saying, yeah, you know, I'm not getting any calls, and the strike's going to kill us, man. Well, you know, we don't get that many movies anyway. So, and I'm looking across the restaurant, and I see a guy that looks like Henry Fonda eating a hamburger. And so now I'm thinking, I'm in a Fellini film.
He's got a golf cap on, right? Right? Doesn't he have a
hat? He has some kind of hat on, yeah, maybe with flaps on the ears or something.
A lumberjack hat? Okay.
He's already an old guy at this time, right? He's like, he's about 80 or so, or what do you think?
This is 1980. You can search that and find out how old he was. You're asking me too many questions.
All right.
The answers, I don't have these answers.
He was old.
I should have them.
He was old.
I have limited space in my hard drive between my ears.
But he did a good GAF commercial, though. I remember that. Henry Fonda for GAF.
Henry Fonda. So I think, you know, I think that's Henry Fonda. So I decide to walk across the room and say, excuse me, are you Henry Fonda? And he looks up and he says, yeah, I'm Henry Fonda. And I said, may I ask you a question? And he thinks and he says, okay, one question. And I said, well, my name's Fred Saxon, and I'm getting ready to go to work for CNN. And I'm wondering how to reach you because I'd like to interview you. We're going on the air, you know, in 2 weeks, and I'd like to have the opportunity to interview you when we get up and running. And he said, CNN, is that Turner outfit? I said, yeah. He said, sit down. I want to talk to you. So I said, sit down? He said, yeah. I said, well, I got a burger over there. He said, get your burger and fries. Come over here and sit down. So I had lunch with Henry Fonda.
With Burger King.
And Burger King. And he was fascinated with Ted Turner. Why? Because Ted Turner was a rebel. He did things differently. And Henry Fonda was a rebel. Mm-hmm. Some really far out liberal guy. Some people thought he was a communist. You know, and he when Henry Fonda, I spoke to a guy that had a place called Rent-A-Wreck in L.A. They rented jalopies.
Mm-hmm.
He said Henry Fonda would come in all the time and rent some dumpy old car and drive it around. He said Fonda would like to get a really crumpled pickup truck and drive it around like a farmer.
The Beverly Hills, right?
He was a great guy. He was fascinated with Ted Turner.
By the way, I looked it up. He was dead 2 years later. That was he was 75 at the time. He passed
when did Jane hook up with Ted Turner?
Yeah.
That's another question. Nobody knows.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling somebody that story once.
Yeah.
And Jane was at the time married to Ted when I was telling them that story. And they said, did you ever tell Jane that story? And I said, no. And they said, well, why don't you tell her? So I called Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
It took me a couple of calls. I got through to Jane's secretary. I told her the story. She said, oh, Jane has to hear this. So Jane called me back. We were on the phone for a half an hour. She was fascinated. She said, I always wondered how Dad and Ted would have gotten along. So it was very exciting because I was now the link between, you know, the living and the gone, and connecting her in a way with her father. You know, it was a family reunion, so to speak.
Yeah.
Through me. So I felt very privileged to be able to do that. And then Henry got sick. Jane got divorced eventually, you know, from Ted. But Henry got sick just at he was in the hospital during the premiere of On Golden Pond.
Mm.
And this was his Oscar-winning role. He had never won an Oscar.
That's right.
He got an honorary one presented to him by Robert Redford. He was in the hospital. I'm at the premiere screening, not the premiere, but the screening where all of the friends and all of the cast was for On Golden Pond. And I decided to make a a get well video card. A video had everybody look into the camera and say, get well, Henry, you know.
You still have that video, don't you?
I have that video, yes. And it was a great opportunity. We made the video, and the people on that were Mark Rydell, the director of On Golden Pond, family members, Dabney Coleman, Fred Astaire was there, Tom Bosley, Joel Gray, Richard Crenna, Jack Lemmon, Alan Carr, Ruth Gordon, Jane Fonda was there, and Jimmy Stewart. And Jimmy Stewart, I said, Mr. Stewart, we're making a get well video card for Henry Fonda. Could we get you to look into the camera and give him a get well message? And Jimmy Stewart looks, he says, well, you're going to show him the tape? Is that it? I said, yeah, we're going to show him the tape. And he looks into the camera and he looks right at it and he winks and he says, Hank, and nods his head.
And that was it.
That was it.
That was it.
Wow. That was it, Hank. Like, we know what's happening.
Wow, all great legends there. So do we have a break coming up right now? We've got a break coming right now, Fred, but stay tuned after New Sports. We'll be back with more Fred Saxon. Hang on.
Now, it's your money and your life on Talk Radio 760 KFMB.
All right, we're back with the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life, and now over to Richard to thank all of our terrific sponsors.
Thank you. And in no particular order, that would be UBS with Mr. Michael Quaranta and Drew Freitas, Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, best CFO company on the planet, Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow, Plato Epic CPAs, best audit and review firm in San Diego, digging out of tax season, I would assume, April 15th, has come and gone. Sean Puckett on a surf trip, I think to Costa Rica with Regions Bank. Steve Sefton and Sean Puckett with Regions Bank, the best business bank in San Diego. Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited, valuing everything under the sun so business owners can make more money. And last but not least, and this will be next week's guest, estate planning and legacy attorney Rich Gaines with Family Legacy Legal. So thank you to all of our sponsors. And Joe, how can our listeners learn more about our wonderful sponsors?
Well, if you just fire up your PC or your Mac or whatever you use and go to iymoney.com, just click on the sponsors tab and they're all there. And with regard to our guest, if you go to fredsaxon.com, you could find all of his great information and some terrific photos. I mean, with all these celebrities, you go on the first page at Christian Bale, Fred's with Ben Affleck. You scroll down, Jeff Bridges, Colin Firth, I mean, on and on. Cliff Robert, the late, great Cliff Robertson, Tom Cruise, you name it. Fred, you've met them, over 800 stars. And how did you manage to keep all the video? I mean, you managed to retain the rights to those, didn't you?
Yeah. For most of my career, I was an independent contractor, and I had the rights to, everything I did, I kept. Not everything that I did while I was at KUSI.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Some of that stuff was theirs, satellite interviews and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to retain a lot of my junket footage. A film junket, by the way, is when you go off and the film companies bring journalists, broadcast journalists, print journalists and everything to a particular town where they're promoting the movie and where the stars of that film have gathered. It's one of the most boring things in the world for mm-hmm. the celebrities because mm-hmm. they got to sit there and talk to a bunch of people. How many? Maybe 200, 250 over a 2 or 3 day period in 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes.
Oh, tell them the Belushi group. Story. Tell them the Belushi story. This is great. Right? Remember you were doing the junket with Belushi? Right? John Belushi. You remember?
I did not do a Belushi story. No.
Yeah, I thought you
had me confused.
Didn't you say that he threw the guy out before you were to go into the room? He threw him out of the room or something? Wasn't that you?
Wasn't me. It was one of your other celebrities.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're getting celebrities confused.
Richard, straighten him out.
So Fred, you can't remember your first interview, but let me ask you a question.
We can't edit that out.
Can't edit that out. Fred, what's your favorite interview ever and why?
Now, that's a great question, and thank you for asking that.
I got to get this thing back on track, so give me a good answer, man.
Yeah, well, that's...
I'm going to have some water, excuse me.
That's the reason I'm doing what I'm doing now, which is writing a book, and it's going to be an e-book that will have video embedded in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's A. And B, that's one of the reasons why I also have a series of lectures or entertaining, infotaining speeches, and I do a lot of that on cruise ships, because I was always asked, and it's a great question. Who's your favorite? Who's your least favorite? And the third question, have you ever met
X?
Hoosits. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you, Richard, before I answer your question.
Yeah.
Who would you like to know more about? In other words, if you were...
Well, I'm fascinated by a guy like Tom Cruise, just because he seems to be so weird and different.
Tom Cruise, the number one movie this weekend. Number one movie this weekend. And he's an interesting guy, and I don't usually include him in my talks.
Okay.
Because...
He doesn't have any couches in his
house.
Joe,
let him finish. Okay. So I don't have any couches in my house. What's the big deal?
I don't either. I'm jumping up and down on a stool.
I sit in chairs, but why don't you mention Cruise?
People, because he's weird. People think
okay, he's weird.
You know, he's weird. They think he's weird because for a number of reasons, but I think the primary one is that he's a Scientologist.
Right.
And I don't care if he's a Scientologist or a...
Proctologist.
that, you may have a point there. But because I'm talking to him about what he does.
Right.
You know, he's an entertainer. And by the way, he's a movie star, I think. He's the nicest guy, one of the nicest ones, and one of my favorites, if I may say so.
But in my own personal opinion, I don't like every movie he's made. He's done, you know...
That's
sure,
you can't like every movie somebody's made. No, I mean, he's made so many movies.
Well, I have to say, Nicholson, I like everything he did, maybe except for the Wolfman thing, but...
But Fred, my question, who was the best or your favorite and why?
There's so many.
Okay, there's so many.
There are so many.
So let me give you another guy that fascinates me, because he was great in this movie called Fearless that didn't really get much critical acclaim, Jeff Bridges. Have you interviewed Jeff Bridges?
Yes, I have.
What do you think of Jeff Bridges?
He's just a nice guy. You know, he's nice. Here's the thing. Let's go back to Cruise if we can.
Okay.
Tom Cruise has a thing. He makes you feel more important than he is.
Okay.
When you walk in the room. And he's always laughing. And
that's a good trait to have.
Yeah. He makes you feel... You walk in the room, he stands up. Hello. And puts out his hand, shakes
his hand. How do you know he's standing up? He's kind of short, isn't he?
Because we can see eye to eye.
Oh, okay. He's not tall. That's the joke there, folks.
Yeah. Tom is... And he's laughing. He's got that great laugh. Ha, 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 ha. And I interviewed him when he had braces on. But the first time I met him was during the premiere of Taps. Timothy Hutton had just come off of Ordinary People.
Ordinary People. Great movie.
Oscar winner. Mm-hmm. George C. Scott was in the movie. Red carpet. Hey, Tim, Fred Saxon with CNN. Can you come over here for a second? He walks over. And I said, I want to talk to you about the movie. And he said, before we talk about the movie, I want you to meet this guy, this young actor. He's in the movie. His name's Tom Cruise. And I said, oh, hi, Tom. How you doing? Meanwhile, Tim, you know, and I just completely blew him off. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And I lost that video.
No.
I don't have that video. But I told Tom the story when I was interviewing him for Minority Report. Hmm. And he laughed like crazy. Ha, 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 ha. And then I said, you were a little chubby then, weren't you? And he said, what? Chubby? No. But he's very generous. I like the guy a lot. As an actor, I think he's a movie star. His personal life is none of my business.
Interesting.
That's just my personal thing, you know. But I have a problem with that because people think, Tom Cruise, no, I don't want to hear about him. He's weird.
But I think in the overall big picture, I think we rate our performers on how well we like his or her performance, whether it's singing, acting, dancing, whatever, and don't even want to get into a lot of their personal lives because, let's face it, I mean, these people are, it's not an ordinary life they're living, and a lot of them have trouble just behaving as, you know, regular human beings. So isn't that correct? I mean, I judge the
artist,
not the artist.
And during my interviews, you know, these are actors. How do I know what they're really like?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do for a living. They pretend, right?
Right.
So maybe they're pretending they want to have their picture taken with me.
Now we're getting into
I was reading this weekend about how Audrey Hepburn faded from the scene once she moved to Rome in the 60s because she just got tired of that life and then went on to be a mother and then, of course, to do the great work that she did with humanitarian causes during the latter part of her life.
Much more rewarding, sure, I think, than that. You know, George Burns, if I may paraphrase him, a couple of George Burns stories. He's one of my favorites, by the way. George Burns was outstanding. The first time I met him was at an event celebrating his 80th birthday or something. And then I was given the assignment. I was doing some work for the Lifetime channel. We were doing a series on sex over 60. active seniors, sex over 60. This is pre-Viagra.
And you were talking to Burns?
Talking to George.
This has
got
to be good.
Well, we went over to the Fairfax district and talked to a lot of, you know, it's predominantly Jewish, Fairfax and Beverly, mm-hmm. Predominantly Jewish area. And love to interview those old folks walking around there by the deli and everything. Mm-hmm. And they were just beautiful men on the street interviews. And this mm-hmm. woman said, sex, you know, it's not so bad. So I'm talking to George Burns. I'm sitting down. I'm very nervous because I'm approaching this question. Is George Burns sexually active? So I'm going.
How old is he at this time now?
Well, he gives his age in the answer.
Okay.
A lot of people are talking about active seniors these days, you know, and staying active into their later years and everything. And intimacy and, I'm trying to ask this question, you know, sexual activity. I'm just wondering, how about George Burns? And George says, you want to know when sex ends? And I said, yeah. And he said, I'm 86. For me, it ended at 2 o'clock this morning. 2 o'clock this morning.
He would have got along well with Mae West, probably, I would think. So,
but back to the acting thing, and the people in Hollywood, George also answered a question. And I think this fits for what goes on in Hollywood. When I asked George how to keep a woman happy, because he and Gracie had a great marriage for so many years. And he said, I think sincerity and honesty, and this is what really rules Hollywood. He said, sincerity and honesty. And if you can fake that, you got it made. And, you know, that's Hollywood. If you can fake that sincerity and honesty, you got it made.
You know, Fred, I'm just going to pitch an idea to you. You ought to get a hold of Ted Turner and come up with a show, Fred Saxon's Legends of Hollywood, and just kind of as a vehicle for all these great 800 hours. I know you were thinking game show at one time, but give that some thought, because you've got a treasure trove of material that I think there's a big audience for this that would appreciate. What do you think?
He won't return my calls.
We'll get somebody at the network. I don't know. It's a good idea, for God's sake.
Thank you. No, it is a good idea, and thank you. Yeah.
And I've got an idea right now. We've got to
take a break.
Let's do that. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after this. All right, we're back with the last segment with Fred Sachs. We're having a great time with him. And where'd we leave off? Richard, you have a question?
Worst interview ever. I don't mean because the person was nasty, but just didn't go right.
I don't know that there's one that didn't go right. I probably repressed that memory.
Sure.
But there have been difficult ones.
I've heard Jerry Lewis is very difficult.
I was in a movie that starred Jerry Lewis, mm-hmm. but I never met him.
Good for you.
Yeah. But there have been those, you know, there are people that are difficult to interview. Tommy Lee Jones is difficult.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you have to engage them. My thing was always to try the job, what the studios want you to do. In a sit-down, one-on-one interview, is to talk about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to get that out of the way as soon as possible and then just get to know the person. I mm-hmm. want to have a real conversation. I want to kind of get them off guard and have them say, without their pat answers. Mm-hmm. You know, how did you enjoy working with Angelina Jolie? She's awful, man. She's mm-hmm. ugly. They're not ever going to say that.
Too many kids.
Yeah, they're never going to tell you that.
Brings them to the set, drives us nuts.
Yeah. You're not going to hear that, but I want to talk about things that, you know, like Dustin Hoffman was a great interview because he took control. And we talked about, he gave me an acting lesson. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a tease, and he did a very funny bit during the tease to coming up on the show. You know, it was very funny. But many of my interviews have been on the red carpet. I interviewed Michael Jackson. The only two people that have the interview with Michael Jackson and Diana Ross together are Regis Philbin and Fred Saxon.
Wow.
And that was at the Oscars in 1981 that had been postponed because of the assassination mm-hmm. attempt on Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a copy of that video.
It's up on the web. It's on YouTube. And Michael Jackson, Diana Ross at the Oscars. It's real quick, and we were more interested in Diana Ross than we were in Michael Jackson at the time, because
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
But he's a good-looking guy then, and it's a kind of a fun interview. Anyway, short and sweet. But a lot of these were red carpet interviews. Everybody's on their good behavior, and it was so different then, Richard, because the press was not as nuts as it is today. The world has gone celebrity crazy, yeah. Just celebrity crazy. I have a quote
You didn't have the paparazzi back then like we do now.
Not like we do now. Yeah. Someone, here's a quote. Listen to this. The current state of the news media is partially to blame for the public's general lack of information vital for responsible citizenship in a democracy. The news media has become an aspect of show business, offering merely infotainment. It has evolved into an entity that tends to function as a public relations agency for wealthy and professional multinational corporations, members of Congress, the current presidential administration, and previous administrations. And she goes on. This is a Teresa Stover quote. So I wave my fist at the TV because they're not giving me news. They're giving me entertainment. Mm-hmm. But wait a minute. I'm part of the problem.
Right.
Well, they say journalism is dead. So what do you think of the Kardashians?
I don't care.
Yeah. You don't care? Okay.
Well, these reality shows. I mean, when I think back, some of the great writing and shows that we had on TV in the past, and I guess now you could maybe find them on some other cable outlets, some great shows, but the networks have gone to the dogs, wouldn't you say?
They're owned by entertainment companies. It only makes sense. They're multinational corporations. Their product is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
They have no... I don't want to get on a soapbox here. So, I mean, there's no obligation to give you news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to keep you tuned in. They want to, yeah. The same as this show. Any show, you want people to stay tuned and hopefully patronize your sponsors, right?
I think we've got more of an obligation here. I think Richard agrees to just be honest and forthright and give people good information, useful information, or entertaining information. But mostly, you know, good stuff.
You got me on.
Yeah, good stuff they're not going to hear anywhere else, Fred. So where else are they going to hear this? You know?
Well, we don't take a political point of view on this show when we talk about wealth, which makes us somewhat different because, well, most shows it's about blaming the other side.
Yeah, exactly. So I hope I wasn't blaming anybody by quoting this.
No, not at all. I don't even watch TV. So.
See, I think that's admirable, and I only watch.
Well, there's some. I mean, you could be selective, and you know, there's some favorite shows.
I watched a little bit because of what was going on in Boston, but I mean, as a general rule, I don't watch TV.
But wasn't that aggravating, though? I mean, they keep repeating the same thing over and over without telling you anything.
Do you read a newspaper?
Online. On the computer. Yeah,
the news.
I do a ton of reading. Yeah. I probably read 2 hours a day.
Online?
Almost all of that's online. 75% of that's online.
What's your favorite source of news?
My favorite source of news is probably the Wall Street Journal.
And you read it online?
Most of the time online. Occasionally I'll pick it up if I'm sitting at an airport or something and read the paper version.
Now, do you think that after Rupert Murdoch bought the Journal, that it changed?
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean, almost every periodical's changed. Just look at what's happened here in San Diego, for goodness sakes.
Well, the editorial page has always been pretty conservative, but as far as their news gathering and news sharing, that's still a pretty well-respected organization, wouldn't you say, from that standpoint?
I think with regard to financial news, it's still very well-respected.
Yeah. Anyway, gosh, we got so serious there at the end. But
no, I wanted to interview Richard.
Yeah, I was going to say, hey, whose show is this, Fred? Come on.
So here we are. See, that was my technique.
But we got a rapper. But Fred, we got a rapper. Thanks so much for being our guest,
Thanks
Fred
for having
Saxon.
Me.
Thanks, Fred.
FredSaxon.com. Go to iWhiteMoney.com to listen to the podcast. Richard, thank you. Have a great week. Thanks to our board operator, Jeff Moore, and co-pilot, Justin Hart, back there, and to Craig Blanke, our con executive, and our programming genius, Dave Sniff. You have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time on It's Your Money and Your Life. Good night now.